BBC News.
This is KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Tuesday, June 14th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's show, I'll speak with an author, licensed psychotherapist, and cancer survivor about her new book, which she will be presenting today in the Boulder Bookstore. Can we worm our way out of our plastic pollution problem? We'll have that story and more on This Week in Water. And our friends at KZMU in Moab, Utah, send us a story about prehistoric mammals in the area. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have an update from the BBC News headlines, and then it's How on Earth. At 9 a.m. comes Alan Watts, the British philosopher, writer, and speaker known for interpreting Eastern religious ideas for a Western audience. Then at 9:30 comes The Morning Sound Alternative, bringing you 2.5 hours of eclectic music. All that's still ahead, but first it's time for local and regional headlines with KGNU's Stacy Johnson.
The Boulder County Sheriff's Office is banning the use of tubes and other single-chamber flotation devices on the North St. Vrain Creek and the St. Vrain River running through Lyons. The Sheriff's Office says high temperatures in the past week have caused mountain snowpack in the South Platte River Basin to melt quickly, further resulting in near-peak runoff levels for the area's rivers and streams. The Sheriff's Office has exempted kayaks and whitewater canoes from the restrictions. The ban comes after first responders responded to two back-to-back tubing incidents on Sunday at Laverne Johnson Park in Lyons. Two 10-year-old children fell out of their tubes early in the afternoon, and another group of seven people became stranded on the far side of the creek later in the day. No serious life-threatening injuries occurred from the incidents. A sheriff spokesman told the Daily Camera tubing restrictions for Boulder Creek are not imminent based on the creek's lower flow levels. Three Coloradans were among 31 members of a white supremacist group, Patriot Front, arrested near an Idaho Pride event Saturday. Authorities arrested the group after a tipster at a Coeur d'Alene hotel reported what looked like a little army loading into the back of a U-Haul truck. Law enforcement stopped the truck near the Pride event and found the men packed in the back of the truck with riot gear. Authorities charged the men from at least 11 states with a conspiracy to riot, a misdemeanor, and released them on a $300 bond. According to Colorado Newsline, the Colorado men arrested are in their 20s and are from the Front Range cities of Louisville, Wheat Ridge, and Thornton. The 26-year-old from Louisville received a bachelor's and master's degree from Colorado School of Mines. The Coeur d'Alene police chief said, based on evidence and documents, the group was planning to riot in several downtown areas. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center, Patriot Front is a white nationalist hate group formed after the deadly 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. Colorado energy regulators want Xcel Energy to include other financial options as the company looks to shut down their coal-supplied power plants. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The Colorado Public Utilities Commission, PUC, is questioning Xcel Energy's $1 billion price tag to shut down the remaining coal-burning power plants. The Colorado Sun reports that this is part of its clean energy plan at cutting the utility's greenhouse gas emissions. The $1 billion would be paid by Xcel customers. The proposed closing costs were part of a settlement agreement between Xcel Energy and a group of state agencies, local governments, and labor and environmental groups. At issue is the financial method Xcel Energy is proposing to recover the closure costs. The commission would like Xcel Energy to analyze a range of financial options to see if they could lower the cost. The plan is to close power plants in Craig, Hayden, Fort Morgan, and Pueblo between 2027 and 2031 at a cost of a little more than $1 billion. $732 million is for shutting down the Comanche 3 plant in Pueblo. The plant that cost $1.3 billion to build only went into operation in 2010 and will be the last to close at the end of 2030. For KGNU, I'm Steve Miller.
Boulder County Community Planning and Permitting and the county's Public Works Department are hosting a virtual public meeting tonight on transportation funding. According to the county's press release, tonight's event will focus on the future of the county's transportation sales tax that will expire in June 2024. The event will also cover options for funding multimodal transportation needs throughout the county. The event starts at 5:30 p.m., and county officials will provide participants an opportunity to ask questions and provide feedback. The public can register for the event at the county's boco.org website under the term Transportation Funding June 14. The public may also view the event at the Community Planning and Permitting YouTube channel. According to the county's press release, the county's transportation sales tax that is set to expire in 2 years funds 44 projects involving roadway improvements, shoulder projects, transit, a transportation demand program, pedestrian improvements, and regional trail projects. Boulder County Commissioners held a virtual community meeting Monday evening for residents impacted by the controversial Gross Reservoir Expansion Project. Denver Water began the project this year, which is expected to continue through 2027. According to the Daily Camera, the county is considering how it will spend $5 million it received from Denver Water, meant to help mitigate construction impacts on nearby residents. Many residents say nighttime noise and light from the construction affects people's sleep, especially for residents who have no central air conditioning and rely on open windows. The Daily Camera reports the county will conduct an impact study over the summer and into the fall and will continue reviewing and responding to questions and suggestions from affected residents. The Longmont City Council will review local gun safety laws during its pre-session meeting tonight starting at 5:30 p.m. According to the Longmont Leader, Mayor Joan Peck asked for a review of local gun laws following the mass killing at Uvalde, Texas. Peck also told the Longmont Leader the Boulder King Supers mass shooting also prompted the review. Longmont's review of gun safety laws follows a series of gun control ordinances passed last week by four Boulder County municipalities, Boulder, Louisville, Lafayette, and Superior. Unlike the council's regular meeting starting at 7 p.m., Longmont does not provide live stream coverage of the council's pre-session events. Today's weather along the upper metro front range includes sunny skies with highs in the low 80s. Winds could gust up to 22 to 34 miles per hour. Tonight's skies will be mostly clear with lows in the upper 40s, low 50s. The current temperature in Boulder is 59 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm joined in the studio by author Mira Rita Oyala. She'll be doing a book talk at the Boulder Bookstore this evening at 6:30 p.m. The topic is Cultivating Hope in Challenging Times, and her book is called The Little Book of Hope. Good morning.
Good morning. Pleasure to be here today.
You are a licensed psychotherapist and a cancer survivor. What role does hope play?
Hope plays amazing role in healing. They actually have studies how the people who have higher rating in hope, they can measure hope. I can't go into that. Can tolerate pain better, can heal from terminal diagnosis better. But also on psychological point, we can find our way forward when we cultivate our hope. And I'm going to talk more tonight about how to cultivate the hope.
Well, give us a little hint about that because, you know, times like these, it sometimes feels like hope is a rare commodity. How can you pull hope out of thin air when everything seems so grim?
Well, it's a big question because there's the balancing, taking care of yourself, nurturing yourself, having something to look up to, like we're looking up to the sun in the sky that brings us light. How do we find something that's inspiring and giving us power, whether it's higher power or our love to our family, or it's something that's our purpose of service, something that gives us the spark of light and lights the pilot light of our heart and the mind to go forward.
And your book, I was expecting you know, opening the pages, seeing a bunch of words, right? But it's actually, it's got a nice design to it. It has photos and just very kind of bite-sized poems. Would you like to read one of your favorite poems from that book?
Well, since we're talking about hope, I thought I'd read the poem that's called Seed of Hope. And it goes like this. It's a miracle how from a tiny seed, a huge tree grows. And in a similar way, from one drop of hope, a stream of hope develops, which grows to a river of hope and leads to an ocean of possibilities where small and big miracles can arise from. Hope is a seed to a new future. An open mind is a fertile soil for that seed. And loving thoughts and prayers are the nurturing raindrops for the seed.
Very nice. Will you be reading that and other poems from the book tonight?
I'll be reading some poems and, like I said, just telling some tips about how we can cultivate hope in these challenging times.
I want to ask, what do you feel about the term self-care? It seems almost like a cliche at this point sometimes, or almost like a cop-out to me personally, but I understand the importance and value of it. What is your take on the use or perhaps overuse of the term self-care?
I think it always depends on your relationship to word. For me, self-care is a way to show that you love yourself. So it's not like, oh, now I do this thing and I'm a good person. It's like, I care about myself and I am going to choose to do something nurturing to me. And what is nurturing to you might be different than to me, but I'm actually taking some awareness and consideration. What is nurturing for me? Because I love myself, I care myself. And when I nurture myself, I'm having good relationship with others and I bring light to the world.
And like many other cancer survivors, you have stared the possibility of death in the face and come back from that. What are some of the most important perspectives that it gave you?
One is gratitude. I'm so grateful to be alive. I went through two cancers and it was tough in all the ways, physically, emotionally, mentally. So, and they have researched how cultivating gratitude is really good for your health. So when I wake up, you know, I might be not feeling 100%, but I'm alive. And when I'm alive, there's always chance to feel better and go forward. So gratitude and perspective, because the little things, I don't sweat the small things so anymore like I used to. And, you know, it just gives you a different perspective to life, to being grateful that we have this gift of life.
Mira Rita Oyala, author of The Little Book of Hope, and will be giving a speech and a talk and a discussion, participatory, I hope, tonight at the Boulder Bookstore at 6:30. Is there anything else that you would like to add or indications as to what is to be expected tonight?
Just come with open mind. Come and show up and see what you can learn, because you never know what seed of hope can be planted in your heart.
Thank you very much for joining me today. Our guest has been Mira Rita Oyala, or Oyala. She will be presenting at the Boulder Bookstore tonight at 6:30 p.m. We'll be right back just after this quick break. Time now for the latest edition of This Week in Water with Jamie Sudler and Franny Halperin.
Can we worm our way out of a plastic problem? That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report. I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
To honor both National Ocean Month and World Ocean Day on June 8th, the Biden administration announced several initiatives geared toward conservation.
One is to create a new marine sanctuary in the Hudson Canyon, about 100 miles off the coast of New Jersey and New York, that rivals the Grand Canyon in scale. The administration called it an ecological hotspot that provides habitat for sperm whales, sea turtles, and other endangered species, including cold water corals.
While the area would be protected from oil and gas drilling, some environmentalists question the effectiveness of the sanctuary system because it is underfunded and some sites allow bottom trawling that endangers sea life.
The Biden administration also announced plans to phase out single-use plastics at national parks and public lands by 2032. The Department of Interior will find compostable and biodegradable alternatives to reduce the tons of plastic that wind up in the ocean.
The White House also said it will develop a first-ever ocean climate action plan that will coordinate efforts to adapt to and mitigate the climate crisis, such as green shipping and marine carbon storage.
And in some encouraging news about the plague of plastic pollution, scientists have found that the larvae of a type of beetle commonly called a superworm, can digest and survive on a diet of polystyrene, a material commonly used in food containers, car parts, and insulation.
Researchers at the University of Queensland think that the worms have an enzyme in their guts that breaks down common plastics. But instead of unleashing the worms on piles of waste, they hope to identify the enzyme and then use it in a recycling process.
First, the beetle larvae crunch the plastic foam by chewing it, and then their gut microbes go to work. A co-author of the study said the microbes could be the basis of an upcycling process in which other bioplastics or chemical compounds are created.
But there could be problems using the worm enzymes, such as the creation of toxic compounds, prompting some to say, why not just ban the plastic? According to the Sierra Club, there are bans on the foam food containers in Chicago, San Francisco, Vermont, and New York, among others. A ban in Los Angeles County goes into effect next year.
The Great Salt Lake in Utah is a ticking time bomb of environmental disaster. Climate change and population growth have caused it to shrink by two-thirds since the 1980s. And as the lake bed becomes exposed, winds could send a toxic cloud of arsenic over nearby Salt Lake City.
The dwindling lake is also becoming saltier, which will affect aquatic species that millions of migratory birds depend on for food. The Great Salt Lake has been historically fed by snowmelt from the Wasatch Range to the east, but global warming is reducing precipitation and increasing evaporation.
Also, too much of the runoff is being diverted to agriculture and to area residents who enjoy some of the lowest water rates in the country. As the New York Times reports, demand could outstrip supply in Salt Lake City by 2040.
Utah state lawmakers have recently required cities and towns to include water in their long-term planning, but rejected efficiency measures such as low-flow fixtures that could have a more immediate impact.
Speaking of high water use, as the drought deepens in the West, residents in Southern California are not conserving enough. According to officials, water use has jumped over 25% in April this year compared to April of 2020.
Much of the consumption can be tied to lush landscapes, as outdoor watering accounts for around 70% of total use. So in response, a utility in the western part of LA County finally put their foot down.
Managers at the Las Virgenes Municipal Water District have installed flow restrictors for customers who've been warned they're exceeding conservation recommendations. The district says the devices, discs about the size of a silver dollar with a hole in it, will reduce flows from 30 gallons per minute to less than one.
The discs won't cause a huge change in the water pressure for showers or sinks, but sprinklers will only spit out a trickle. The district says devices for offenders will be in place for 2 weeks and are meant to raise awareness about historic drought conditions.
And finally, many parts of the country are enduring record-setting heat, a preview of a potentially scorching summer. NOAA has forecast that most of the contiguous U.S. will have above normal temperatures in June through August.
But for some, it won't be hot enough. In their food, anyway. fans of the hot chili sauce sriracha are preparing themselves for an unprecedented shortage.
Bloomberg reports that the manufacturer has been forced to halt production of the popular spicy condiment made with red jalapeno chili peppers because of severe weather conditions and crop failures in Mexico.
The company hopes to resume deliveries of the sauce with the iconic green cap and the rooster on the bottle after Labor Day. Until then, keep a cool head if a less than spicy summer has you hotter under the collar.
That's it for this week in water. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Tonight at 6, tune in for a special edition of Hemispheres, in search of invisible republics in China. Tuesday, 6 o'clock, right here at KGNU.
Dinosaur fossils usually get the limelight in southeastern Utah, but the area also has a treasure trove of Jurassic-era mammals. Justin Higginbottom of sister station KZMU visits a quarry to speak with archaeologists excavating humans' earliest ancestors.
I'm driving down a dirt road near Cisco with Brian Davis. He's an archaeologist with the University of Louisville, and we're heading to his excavation site. For him, these dry hills and ridges of sandstone have been a jackpot.
Mammals are almost the most common type of organism we're finding there, when that's unheard of.
We're on the Morrison Formation. It's an area of sedimentary rock that's provided scientists with the most dinosaur fossils in all of North America.
The Jurassic period, which is when the Dinosaur National Monument, all the big charismatic dinosaurs, when they were running around out here, mammals of that time worldwide are doing a lot of really interesting things.
And that's Davis's focus, mammals from the Mesozoic era. It's a big chunk of time between 220 million years ago to when the big asteroid hit 66 million years ago. The critters were probably rodent-like and about the size of squirrels or rats. While dodging large predators, they evolved those features humans and other modern mammals share.
My goal is to find things at the bottom of our lineage. What the earliest ancestors that gave rise to our specific line of the tree, what those mammals were like.
He says we have a pretty poor understanding of where our branch of the mammal line comes from. It took some work for him to find this place that may help provide an answer.
A lot of walking and driving horrible roads and walking and dragging my colleagues and buddies on death marches, not finding stuff. But we made it out here eventually.
He found this site in 2015. It's called the Cisco Mammal Quarry, and he's been working it with colleagues ever since.
I have every expectation, not even, I'm beyond hope, I have every expectation that what we're going to find is things that are going to move the ball downfield, for capital S science.
At the site, a few archaeologists are busy with the morning's work.
Hi, everybody.
They're sitting under an awning and breaking rocks with hammers. They're looking for black specks or smudges in the white rock. Those dark areas are bone.
What you got there?
Yeah, something. See, again, it's just some tiny little black streak. It's obviously different from the things around it, but even in magnification, it's hard to tell what it is.
If the sample looks promising, they bring it back to the lab and might give it a CT scan.
Finding it is a lucky moment, but then it's just a lot of this sort of work. It's fighting wind and sun and cedar gnats.
Yesterday, they had one of those lucky moments. David says it's their best find yet.
This animal that we found yesterday has a good chunk of the skeleton.
That's Guillermo Roger, also of the University of Louisville. The 3-inch pile of bones could be nearly a complete specimen.
Well, it's kind of a Rosetta Stone that puts several things that we had isolated before. Now you know how to piece it together, and it will help. It will help in many, many ways, yes. It's very nice.
Davis says his work with mammals often rides dinosaurs' coattails, or just tails, in funding and museum interest. But he says his work offers something unique.
We have the ability to tell a narrative that is much more obviously directed to us as a species that dinosaur paleontologists can't. They can say something amazing about the past, but we can say amazing things about where we came from, which is a much more
kind of intellectually satisfying story.
Out here, adding to that story could be just a rock away. Justin Higginbottom, Rocky Mountain Community Radio.
And that's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. Thanks to Stacy Johnson, Steve Miller, Lily Noble, Azucena Flores, Jamie Sudler, and Franny Halperin for their contributions to today's program. I've been your host, Shannon Young. If you'd like to make a comment about something you heard on KGNU, you can give us a call at 303-447-9911 and leave us a voicemail. We usually play those messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for How on Earth. That's coming up just after these news headlines from the BBC.